Hello, everyone. I'm Alex, and I'm here with my husband, Shane, and we are so glad that you could join us for Happy Hour on this Family Tree Podcast, episode 199.
Whoa.
Getting there.
Man, we're close.
Getting, but you know what's, like, we've done way more than 200 episodes because we've done date nights. We've done the mini podcasts during COVID when we were recording, like, almost every day.
Yeah, that was our plan. Your dad suggested it. He goes, how about you record a podcast every day of the pandemic? At the time, we thought, what's 2 weeks? Okay, let's do the 2 week challenge. We didn't know the pandemic. We're still going to be reeling from it right now.
I know. It does feel like it. We just got out of it in a way. Like, it's truly, and I know there's so many memes about it, but it does feel like 2019 just happened.
5 years ago, half decade ago.
It's nuts. It's nuts. It's bananas, but this is exciting. You know, official long length podcast episode 200 coming out next week.
So you just said nuts, bananas, and long length.
I've got bulges on the brain, baby.
Bulges on the brain. Okay.
We have our premiere tomorrow. So we have our premiere on Thursday, March 14th. You know, you guys will be hearing this after. But we have a movie theater. We're going to show Shane's St. Patty's Day episode for the show, which is coming out on Crave on Sunday on St. Patrick's Day. And I can't think of anything else.
You said our premiere because Alex has a big role in this.
Not a big role, Shane.
Well, a role. You're on camera. Saying lines. Okay. And you're very good.
I feel like it's more my project in the sense that it's our whole family's project. Like, when you're working on something like this, our entire family is working towards that, whether it's making time so that you can go and do that, or whether it's all of us driving to somewhere to set to
But it's
whatever.
More than that, too, because you were literally on set every single day. Mm-hmm. So you were working on the show too, and you acted in the show, and the kids were in the show. But, you know, even if I wasn't in the family, you're a big part of the show.
Well, even just now, I've got your director I'm talking to today because I need files from him so I could bring to a company to get stuff done. I got another producer on the phone with me today. I got you guys a spot on daytime TV on Friday, so I'm now in management as well.
We're going to be on CHCH. And when I say we, I mean the two younger stars of the show, because it didn't seem like CH really wanted me on for some reason.
Well, I think you are super handsome, and I think you are full of, what do the kids say now, Riz?
Riz.
But I think they want somebody with, what, like more Instagram followers maybe?
Maybe more youth.
Maybe more youth.
It's hard to say up and coming star when you're in your 40s. Prodigy.
How old was Morgan Freeman when he started?
Did you Google stars who started later in life?
No, but everybody knows.
Oh, there's Samuel L. Jackson. I believe Morgan Freeman was an actor when he was young.
Oh, okay.
There's Dennis Franz, I believe, from, he's on like NYPD Blue or something, but he broke out when he was in his 40s.
Hey, you know who did just break out and got their first Oscar?
Who?
Godzilla. After 70 years and 68 movies, or 38 movies, I don't know how many, something with an 8 in it, just got his first Oscar.
Man, this feels like a bad bit on like a late night show, like that was pitched in the writer's room.
Anyway, it is super exciting. We have that coming out this weekend. I am very excited just to get it out there and to watch with people and laugh with people. And I'm also excited for the stress of it, because the stress has been building and building. And I mean, Shane, you've had like 5 sleepless nights in the last 5 nights. It's been awful. So I'm kind of excited because I feel like we're at the climax of all this stress and chaos. So I'm excited for that release and for that to be over and we can fall back into a more natural way of living.
Yeah. If the show doesn't get picked up for 6 episodes, it's almost a relief. It's like, oh, thank God I don't have to do that. It's not like I'm making money off this.
No, we are not. But it's a lot going on, and it is super exciting. But it has been a month of change and chaos and everything, as you guys know from our last episode. But even more things that I haven't really touched on in this pod or on my Instagram account, just because I didn't really know how to broach things, and I don't necessarily – I don't know. I like sharing more private things in the podcast because it's just you and I talking, and – our listeners here feel more like family than everyone on Instagram. There's too many of them.
Yeah.
But
we have a cult following here, a very small cult that, you know, they don't necessarily share with each other. But.
I was trying to think of how I could kind of encapsulate the last couple months succinctly for us as a family. And it really has to do with Lucy, but I'd say fostering bravery. And I kind of wanted to have this discussion with you. But there's been a few things. Lucy was diagnosed with mild ADHD by her pediatrician. Then she was diagnosed with epilepsy by her neurologist. And all of this on its own, without anybody else being sick, without the show happening, without, you know, having so many jobs, that's a lot of appointments. That's a lot of stuff on a plate. And it's all been kind of nerve-wracking for Lucy because I've been taking her to so many doctor's appointments. And then we've had her having panic attacks, going into things that she likes doing and at school and things like that. And I think that you, Shane, have been super instrumental in helping me learn about anxiety and things that kind of go hand in hand with ADHD, because I don't know much about it at all. And my only experience with like anxiety or panic attacks has been with you. Yeah. I've had one or two in my life and you helped me. So I still don't even know enough about them. But Lucy's been kind of having panic attacks. And if you can explain, because if anybody's like me, yet they, if they haven't had one, they don't even know what it feels like
to have a panic attack. Yeah, I was having a mini one yesterday morning on the train, and I was just like, I can't breathe, my heart's gonna stop, I'm gonna faint on this train in public and be humiliated, and I'm not with any loved ones who are gonna call 911. So you just have irrational fears, you know they're irrational, but you start spiraling out of control, sometimes just looking up at the stars and thinking about existential thoughts can spiral you out. And knowing that you're having a panic attack is half the battle. Because if you don't know and you've never had one before, you might just think you're freaking out or you're legitimately going to die. Or sometimes I'll think, I didn't drink enough water today. Oh no, I'm... Often it's when I'm trapped too. Like I'm on a train and I can't access water or food.
Right.
I tend to think I'm going to faint for some reason. That's a common thing that happens to me. But looking up YouTube clips on how to calm down from a panic attack are very helpful. Breathing normally, or breathing maybe abnormally, taking in like one of those type of breaths that you might normally not normally do, are very helpful to get out of it. But that's essentially what a panic attack is. I would say most cases, it's about immediate death or fainting or humiliation that is irrational because you're not going to do any of those things, but you somehow believe you are.
See, I think the humiliation is somewhere where Lucy gets it. So like Lucy was really enjoying going to martial arts and then she ended up getting a stripe on her belt. So the stripe system is basically like you get so many stripes and then you go to the next color belt. So right now she's a white belt and then after a certain amount of stripes, she gets her yellow belt. So she got her first stripe because she was proficient in whatever things they were teaching her, like the basic steps. And then she went to another class and then a kid asked her why. And I think like in a happy way, the kid was like, oh, how'd you get your stripe? And then I guess, you know, thinking about how Lucy would have been, she started thinking about it. And then she's like, she didn't know how to answer that. She didn't know how to describe how she got it.
Yeah.
And then she started thinking, I don't know how I got my stripe. I didn't deserve my stripe. Why do I have a stripe? And started, like, she's so good at jiu-jitsu. But then she started spiraling into self-doubt, felt humiliated by this. And then we have had 3 weeks now ever since then of wild panic attacks before going in. And she wants to go. So we go to the place where she does her martial arts. She gets in her uniform and then it takes us 20 minutes to get down into the room if we can get down there at all. And I had another mother actually was in the lobby with me last time. And she was like, after I finally got Lucy in, she was validating me. She's like, you did a great job. My daughter has anxiety. And like, these are all things that the therapist said to kind of tell her. But it's scary because Lucy will start hyperventilating about her belt, about a belt. And it's so sad. And I think for me, the hardest part isn't talking her through it. It's not crying because I'm so heartbroken for her that she can't see how amazing she is and how confident she should be because she's, you know, she can back it up. Like, I'm so proud of her, yet she's so full of self-doubt and almost like self-criticism almost without actually criticizing herself. It's like she's thinking it in her head. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I go through this. I play basketball in the men's league and I'm the captain of this team. And I came up with this huge plan, this huge winning ecosystem.
Shane was like the guy from Moneyball. Like he like got super scientific with it.
Yeah, analytics. I run analytics because I was the fourth captain, meaning I got to pick my team fourth. Mm-hmm. But when you're in a men's league, there's usually only one or two great players, maybe three. So by the time you're at the fourth pick, you better be strategic with how you're making your team or else you're not going to win. So anyway, I picked unconventional players. We have an unconventional style of play. People actually laughed at mm-hmm. our team when they saw it because we do look hilarious. There's some interesting characters on our team. But the point is, me as the captain, I started getting it in my head. As a captain, I got to be the best player. Mm. I got to score some points. I got to play the best defense. Yesterday, I played the worst game of basketball I've probably ever played in my entire life. If there was a referee there, a referee brings back PTSD yeah. from my playing days. I used to be an awesome player in practice, a shit player in games. So Lucy, I think when she gets this black stripe on her belt, and you know how people act with children, it's Lucy, you got a stripe. You're the best. You're a kung fu master. Come here. You say all this hyperbolic stuff, which yeah. is supposed to pump a kid up, make them mm-hmm. feel good about themselves and give them confidence. To Lucy, she interprets it as initial excitement. Mm-hmm. That excitement turns into fear because of expectation. Now yeah. she's like, I'm a kung fu master, but I don't feel like I'm a master. This was a big deal. What if they make me do a demonstration? What if they ask me to help teach the class? What if someone asked me why I got this when I truly don't know? So we kind of had to reframe the stripe mm-hmm. that she got on her belt of, listen, the stripe actually wasn't that big of a deal. It's cool that you got it, but it doesn't mean that you've mastered karate. You're still a white belt, mm-hmm. and there's many stripes in a white belt. Then you go to yellow. Then there's many stripes in yellow. Then you go to orange, et cetera, mm-hmm. all the way up to black. I said it's the equivalent of you getting a sticker for doing a good job in junior kindergarten. And you know, yes, that still feels good and you had a good day, but you didn't do anything that means you're gonna do demonstrations for class. There's this huge expectation that you're a karate master. So you just reframe it that way. She's still terrified yeah. to go to this class. I don't even think she'll ever wear her belt again.
Yeah, the last couple times I only got her in doing it because I told the senseis, I was like, she's not gonna wear her belt anymore. She just mm-hmm. can't. She has major anxiety about it. And they were like, yeah, no problem. And they were so cool with it. They're so kind. Like, they really like yeah. her. So now she just goes in with no belt because she can't even stand to look at the stripe.
Yeah. And a lot of anxiety. Like Lucy today, for example, she didn't want to go to daycare because mm-hmm. it's March break. And for us to even record this podcast and get some things done around the house, we have to ship both kids off to daycare, mm-hmm. which, you know, Lucy typically wouldn't be in daycare at being 5 years old. But Lucy's like, I just don't know who's going to be there. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what we're going to do. So a lot of the anxiety is fear of the unknown.
Yep.
And I'm like that when I go into a party. I'm like, who's going to be there? Who am I going to talk to? What's the plan? What's the expectation? Mm-hmm. Is there going to be music there? What are people wearing? I don't want to stand out in any way. I don't want to be exceptional. I also mm-hmm. don't want to be the opposite of being exceptional. So I want to blend right in and almost be unnoticed. Yeah. And if I end up having fun, so be it. But I want to also be able to not have fun and to leave.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like Lucy sets really high expectations for herself socially. Cause like yesterday, we had a play date yesterday. She's having the best time. I know at school she has a ton of friends and she's like a leader kind of at school. Mm-hmm. But then she has these wildly high expectations. And like two nights ago, she had a panic attack at bedtime because of something that she perceived she did wrong at school. And she said she couldn't stop thinking about yeah. it. And you know, when she was younger, I know you and I used to do kind of like breathing with her. And, you know, I used to do that with her before jiu-jitsu when she was getting nervous. We'd do some deep breathing. And now I see her. It's kind of cute because she does it on her own. So mm-hmm. like before her last jiu-jitsu, I could see her getting like kind of shaky and tears started welling up. And then I was about to like grab her or hug her or something. And she goes, nope, hold on. And then she took two steps away from me and just put her hands out like this and started doing deep breathing by herself.
Yeah.
And while my heart was breaking because I didn't want her to experience this, I was super proud that she was finding her own ways now that we've been through different methods with her to cope and to kind of help settle her down. So those things really help. And she is going to start seeing a therapist just to give her strategies, like ADHD type strategies for when she gets too hyped up or when she is having an anxiety attack. And they're going to help out with that. And they're really good with kids. So I'm looking forward to that session because I think they're going to get us in like two or three times with somebody. And then just call it quits after that. It just takes so long. I think in another month or two, we'll be able to get an appointment. But we've been on a wait list for only two or three months so far. So
you're really holding things back for the pod, eh?
What?
I'm learning this on the pod with our listeners.
So much stuff has been going on. Mm-hmm. It's been wild. And honestly, there have just been so many doctor's appointments. It's been hard for even me to get my head around everything and keep up with them. But yeah. It's all ultimately good. And the reason I was thinking about this all in like facing bravery and fostering that and like, you know, helping her to work through these hard moments was because we had a hard moment this weekend, but it was something that Lucy really wanted to do. And Shane, I thought you were so good in that situation of kind of being there for Lucy and talking her through it. But Lucy has been begging us for 2 years now to get her ears pierced. Like, has been really wanting it, asks me every couple days when she could do it. And then on Saturday, she asked again, and I kind of looked at Shane, and I was like, you know what? Like, we're on March break. I'm home. I can clean her ears really easy every morning without, like, rushing to work. She has a break from swimming and from karate this week. It might be a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went, but of course, as a kid does, she started getting nervous as we were going. And Shane, I thought you were really good in kind of working that out.
Was I? I can't even remember what I did, but...
You were great. You were talking about how she does hard things and how she has faced bravery so many times this past month.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's in a brave mode. And that's the thing about bravery. You can't be brave unless you're scared. Mm. So it's one of those things that come hand in hand with each other. There's a part in the movie Three Kings where George Clooney's talking to Spike Jonze, who's mostly known as a director, but he's an actor too. And he's asking Spike to do something. And he's saying, you only get the courage after you do something that you don't want to do. And it's like, it's just how it works. He words it better than I am now. But point is, it's a memorable scene in what otherwise might not be that memorable of a movie.
I get your drift, though. And I think that is so important because you don't get bravery points or courage points if you're not scared to do something. Like me going to a party isn't the same as you going to a party, right? Because I might not have any fear.
And that's not to say that you don't get social anxiety too, because I do think it's also healthy to have a modicum of social anxiety when you enter any party. It's just to protect yourself and to mind your P's and Q's and to be a little uncertain. And that can also manifest as excitement to a lot of people. And it's very similar, excitement and nervousness, but it's just... For people with social anxiety, it's so overwhelming that it's a barrier of entry. So you don't even want to go, even if something very good can happen at this party. Or if there's a high likelihood that it's going to be a fun time, it's still sometimes too overwhelming to go.
Well, the last party I went to, I actually was incredibly nervous about it. And I typically do not have that level of anxiety about parties. But remember, I was going up for my cousin's 40th birthday party.
Yeah.
And I was really doubting whether I should go or not. And I was like getting ready. I wanted to look really nice. And as I'm doing, like I finished getting ready. I was like, okay, we look good. We feel good. But I was just saying that to myself to kind of force it because I was not feeling good about it at all. And I was like kind of essing my pants until I got there.
Yeah.
And I had to get you to talk me through it. Shane's like the go-to therapist in the house. It's real nice. Because I think you've been through it. So you're just the most knowledgeable in that way. You're like Howard Stern in that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, I read a lot of books growing up on... There's a book called Hope and Health for Your Nerves, which really helped me. Why you look at me like that's not cool?
No,
it's a famous book by an Australian author. No, I believe Dr. Sue Weeks. You gave me the biggest...
No, I'm not trying to. Shane's been thinking. I've been looking at him all these different ways today. Sorry. My face and my thinking face today are just off kilter. I'm tired and I'm not trying to look at you with death stares. I'm not trying to look at you like you're crazy. I'm trying to look at you like a normal person.
No, you looked at me like I just farted or like went to the washroom on your chest or something. You're like, eyebrows were down like Uncle Leo in Seinfeld.
No, I was just trying to take it in. Sorry.
Take it in?
I was just trying to listen.
That
yeah.
I read a self-help book called Hope and Health for Your Nerves. Huh?
I wasn't trying to be crazy.
Okay. Yeah, but I read this book because I had a traumatic life event in my 20s that it gave me something called depersonalization,
right,
which was terrifying. Matthew Perry actually did a movie about this. I forget what
about it, depersonalization.
About depersonalization. So in the movie, I believe Matthew Perry, he smokes weed in it, and then he just feels very unreal afterwards, and life itself just felt nuts. And I think it even came out on my birthday, or like that's May weird. 14th.
And it's called Numb.
Numb. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's so weird. All these weird coincidences were happening. Like the day I had this event, the person who made LSD actually died at the age of like 102. And so I'm having these symptoms and I'm hearing this on the radio and all this thing. I'm tripping out. Nothing feels real. And then I just had to contact this guy in Ireland who also went through derealization or depersonalization, it's also called. And I read this book, Hope and Health for Your Nerves. And these things all gave me little tools to learn about myself and how to get out of certain situations.
That's so scary. See, I've heard you tell the story. Like, I remember you telling it to me when we first started dating. And it was wild. Like, that's one of the scariest things that I've ever heard of happening, because it sounds like to me, like being apart from this, that you feel kind of trapped in your own body or reality without knowing what's real and what's not. And that sounds terrifying.
Yeah, it's like you're in your brain controlling yourself, but there's so much thought. Mm-hmm. It's like there's so many things you're not supposed to think about in life, and that protects you from your brain not getting overwhelmed.
No.
Like you're not supposed to think like, my arm's moving, now I'm going to open the door. And if you do that about every thought, by like 3 p.m., you're ready for bed. Mm-hmm. So that would happen, but then I couldn't sleep at night.
Yeah.
And then days would go by. So if you go through no sleep for like 72 hours, you have temporary psychosis. Mm-hmm. So then you go see a doctor. Then the doctor thinks you're schizophrenic. Then the doctor gives me an antipsychotic.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's called Seroquel. But
see, and I feel like if, you know, other mothers are listening and or parents in general, but I'm thinking like breastfeeding mothers like myself, you know, those early days when we came home with the baby and I was awake for nights, every night, I was getting maybe 40 minutes of sleep on a lot of nights in a row and I was in a psychosis and it was the most wild feeling. Like it was very scary.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine feeling like that all the time. Like that's awful. I got out of it at least after not too long, but
yeah, like certain people are susceptible to it, right? Mm-hmm. Like Lucy, because she has such a good support system, I have a feeling she can make out of it just fine. But left to your own devices, you're kind of playing Russian roulette with how you're going to end up as an adult. And you could just go way down the wrong path unless you know what's going on. Like also Lucy is benefiting from being part of the internet age. When I was growing up, I kind of had a foot on both sides of the equator. I knew what it was like before internet, and the jello was almost setting there too. I think it was in grade 9 when the internet was kind of just still a piece of shit, but at least there was information I could look up. And now it's just so accessible, maybe too accessible, because now there's so much information that can actually be rot your brain in itself.
Oh, it is. There's so much information that you don't know what is real and what's not. And it's like depersonalization almost, but in tech terms. Like Lucy and I were going through pictures the other night. So she was having a bedtime kind of freak out. She was scared of something and she was spiraling. So she wanted to look at happy pictures on my phone. So we started looking at pictures of rainbows and scenery.
Yeah.
And then we clicked on this one particularly beautiful picture of a rainbow. And in my head, I'm like, oh, this has got to be AI. Like everything's way too perfect. And then we just were in, you know, a different thing because it was AI. And then it was like rainbows in unicorn, rainbows in a Pegasus and all these. But it looked so realistic. And Lucy's like, Mom, look, a real unicorn. I was like, no, honey, that's just made by the computer. And she couldn't wrap her head around it. And honestly, it was hard for me to wrap my head around too because everything was so realistic. And it's I'm sure there's like that is going to set off depersonalization in some people, because like with deep fakes and all of that, there's such a weird blur between what is real and what is not real.
Yeah.
And that's very scary. You know, when you mentioned self-help books, I was just thinking, I was like, have I ever read any type of self-help book? And I have. And I think it's so indicative of growing up as a girl in the early 2000s. I think the only two I'd ever read, I forget the title of the
Power
one, but it was,
now?
No, it was Skinny Girl. And then this
sounds like a great self-help book.
And then the second one was Japanese Women Don't Get Old or Fat. And
so
it's,
both seem like very
yes,
similar. These yeah, are diet
they were,
books.
They were like,
it's not self-help.
Well, it was what was modeled and marketed to young girls in the early 2000s to like get yourself
book.
On top. But they acted like they weren't diet books, but they were. And it was so, it was such bullshit.
It's like principles for losing weight rather than just what to eat. It's,
yeah. But it was like, it's going to help your whole life. Like, this is how girls should be. And it was just marketed in that way. And I like bought into it. With mm-hmm. such vigor. And I think that's why my women my age are screwed up yeah. in a way. You know what I mean? Because that's like, it was pushed on us and they were like the best-selling books.
I wonder if we were to talk to like somebody 50 years ago, if you ask them, do you think you're part of the last generation to live before the earth blows up? If they would say yes. Because I feel like everyone I talk to right now, they all say, yes, the earth is going to end in my lifetime.
Well, I think that it's a realistic fear from anybody from 50 years ago until now. I think if we asked somebody in the 1800s, they would not think that.
No, but, what, a horse is going to
exactly
like, burst into nuclear bomb?
But I think that since nuclear bombs were invented, I mean, that's what changed the old doomsday clock, brought it super close to midnight, and it hasn't moved since then. But
I need to learn more about doomsday clocks. We've got a doomsday clock close to midnight?
Yeah, yeah. I'll tell you what it's at right now officially. Hold
when
on.
When it's at midnight, is that when we die?
That's when it's at midnight. I don't even think we'll be alive to see that it's at midnight.
What's it at right now? What time is it?
I'll tell you. Current time on the doomsday clock. So this is from the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists. And this has been, it was founded in 1945 by Albert Einstein, Oppenheimer, and scientists at the University of Chicago.
Mm.
And we are 90 seconds to midnight. So we're a minute and a half to midnight.
Okay. What was it 30 years ago?
Let's see. Okay. So after the Soviets' first nuclear test in 1949, it was 3 minutes to midnight. In 91, it was 17 minutes to midnight. So it was far away. So that was the end of the Cold War.
What happened in 91?
It was the end of the Cold War. So that okay. kind of threat was over. So it got pushed back to 17 minutes. So we had some good time. And then in 2023, with the war in Ukraine, there are biological and climate concerns. It was pushed to 90 seconds. And now in 2024, it's still at 90 seconds because of the same concerns plus the added AI concern it's now listing.
Okay, so.
So we're 90 seconds to midnight.
So half a bag of popcorn away from certain death.
Yeah. But yeah, so I think that in the last 50 years, truly, we could blow up the planet at any given moment. And it just wasn't, this kind of thing wasn't a concern for people 100 years ago.
But I now have the tools to handle that existential fear once the nuclear bomb does come my way.
And I have the tools to stay skinny throughout it.
Yeah, that's good.
But Shane, do you want to go to the question segment?
I do. Now, this is the question segment, also known as the mailbag segment, where Alex takes your questions, the listener, and Googles the answers.
Or we bring up answers from the heart chain.
From the dome. Of course, because you could Google the answers. Why you send them to us is to get our unique, hilarious perspective.
Okay, I actually have one. The first question gives you, it's a little juicy for you and I because we know who wrote it in. And Erica, our editor, is going to bleep out the name. But I didn't know these two people were getting married. And are getting married.
Oh, wow.
So our friend wrote in. And she said, is there anything that you regret bothering with on your wedding day? We're currently planning ours.
Okay, what do I regret bothering with?
I know one thing.
What?
Off the dome. Okay, so I went in. This is like one of the things that pissed me off the most about my wedding day. I went into a florist and we did a really chill wedding, backyard wedding. It wasn't that much fuss. Obviously, there's still a ton of planning that goes with it. And we didn't have a planner, like I did everything, but it was kind of nice. We only had 4 months to plan it as it was. So it's like we can only do what we have in that time frame anyway, mm-hmm. Which was kind of a relief because some things were just hard no's and that made it easier.
Yeah.
But I went to a florist like the week before the wedding and I brought in Shane's shirt because he had these really beautiful like cornflower blue flowers on it. And I was like, oh, this is such a pretty color. Like this is what I want in my bouquet. So I asked the florist, I was like, hey, can you just put together a bouquet for me for like next Saturday with flowers that are this color and this color? And she was like, yeah, sounds great. I was like, okay, how much will that be? And then she's like, oh, it'll be, you know, $70 like for the size I want. I was like, okay, perfect. And then she goes, okay, and now are these being cut and put in a vase? And I was like, oh, no, they're going to be held. And she's like, held by who? And I was like, oh, they're going to be held by me? And then she just looked at me. All of the humor and kindness and warmth dropped from her face. And she goes, are these for your wedding? And I said, yes. And she goes, okay, well, it's not going to be $80. And I was like, are you kidding me? And then she ended up charging me $250. I was like in tears. I was arguing with her about it in a polite way. It was just a mess for a little while. And then on the wedding day, there's so much going on. We're so excited. Everything's happening. That I walked down the aisle without my bouquet anyway. Didn't have it for any of my pictures. It was in my mom's fridge in the basement. And we didn't think about it until 2 a.m. when we were like half in the bag or totally in the bag. And then somebody ran downstairs and got my bouquet. And Shane and I got one picture with the bouquet on Snapchat. And that was $250.
Dang.
Yeah. So I regret bothering so much about that stupid thing. Because yeah. We still had a beautiful wedding and I didn't need a bouquet. You don't need a bouquet. Why do you have to carry flowers down the aisle? You don't need it if you don't want it.
Try to think. Yeah, I would say don't mess around with your speech too much. Keep your speech short. Yeah, just this. Yeah, I don't like I have so much anxiety. I almost plan a speech too long because I'm scared. But don't like I wouldn't worry about that stuff. It doesn't matter. Yeah, that'd be my main thing.
Yeah, I just set your expectations a little looser. I see so many people getting super stressed out about their wedding days and then it hinders them from being able to have a really great time. But I think if you just kind of go with the flow a little bit, allow yourself to give things up and allow things not to be, you know, quote unquote perfect, then you're gonna have a better time and you're going to be able to roll with the flow, you know, allow some things to go wrong because things always go wrong and you want to be able to laugh it off or at least not care that much.
Yeah. Don't take it seriously and don't think that it's going to be the best day of your life. Because think about anything in life. How many times has the thing you thought that was going to be the best day of your life actually been the best day of your life?
Yeah.
It's not going to feel the way you think it is. It's going to go past and it better not be the best day of your life.
No, like I loved our wedding so much and I loved the moment. I remember so well the moment that you and I were doing our vows and it was so beautiful. And that.
Oh, yeah. When we were looking at each other on the thing, it was an awesome moment and very memorable. But yeah, I guess let it be the best day of your life if it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But don't go in that it has to be.
Yeah.
Because you have many days in your life.
I think some of my favorite days in my life have been like you and I doing nothing or adventuring around somewhere on a trip or whatever. Mm-hmm. And those days have been like start to finish.
Maybe the honeymoon, one of those days was the best.
Oh, 100%. Those
birds diving in the water when it's kind of raining.
Oh my God, yeah. Us on the boat.
Weird Airbnb host.
Oh yeah, she kept making us kiss in front of her.
Yeah.
Which we obliged because we were happy newlyweds.
That was the best day of my life.
Kissing in front of a horny French lady. Okay, the next question. What is your take on eliminating toxic people, even if that means in-laws and being okay with it? So I will say that I feel like this is something that's super popular with like therapists right now, oddly, is like, ooh, that person's toxic. Get rid of them out of your life. And I hear people talking about these things all the time and it boggles my mind. It's like, why not maybe some people, they need to be eliminated, honestly. Maybe they're bad people and there's no saving them. But I feel like in a lot of these situations, we just set boundaries and we don't eliminate people totally, but we set boundaries. Maybe we see them less. Maybe we give them less access to us. But I think there's often ways to work around it rather than just saying, nope, you're cut. You know what I mean?
What's a way to work around it?
A boundary or, I don't know, just seeing them less. But
Why do you even want to see a toxic person less though?
But who's saying they're toxic? The person, because maybe...
But the question is predicated with that they're toxic.
Yeah, but maybe the person...
You're arguing that this hypothetical person isn't so bad?
Maybe that person's a toxic person.
So what? Why do the two toxic people got to see each
other? Maybe the other person's fine. The person that's asking this is the toxic person.
Who cares? What does it matter who's toxic?
Well, maybe they got work to do on themselves.
Maybe. But I have enough trouble seeing people who aren't toxic. You know, sometimes I'm cutting people out of my life who are perfectly fine. Just because I'm, you know, it's work to keep a relationship going. And then before you know it, 10 years go by and you're like, he's my best friend. But you don't even see them.
Shane, I was thinking about this morning.
What?
That exact thing. My best friends? No, like, well, yeah, saying that about people. And then it's like, oh, no, they have never met my children. I have never met their children. Does this still apply?
That's what I mean. So they're not even toxic. They're just not existing.
I don't know. So what's your take on like cutting out in-laws if they're toxic?
Cut them out. Who cares? Yeah. Like, you know, sometimes you just don't have the bandwidth for people who aren't toxic and who are friendly. It's like, it's hard for me to leave the house. So we could be going to a petting zoo with, you know, Aerosmith, and I wouldn't want to go.
True. A petting zoo with Aerosmith. I like that situation.
My brain is firing off random synapses.
So. I'd be happy not to meet Steven Tyler, actually. He really freaks me out. Yeah, he freaks me out. There's something so freaky about him. Like, he's like not real. It's like he's an alien inside of a body.
So you want toxic people interactions, but you won't interact with a geriatric Steven Tyler.
I would for the stories.
Okay.
I would for, you know, just stuff to talk about on the podcast, I guess.
Interesting woman you are.
Thanks. Next question.
I'm like Yoda. Interesting woman you are.
Is it considered rude to be late?
Yes.
Yes. I'll say, if you're running late or something, let somebody know. And then I think there's just some things that can't be
helped. You're looking in a mirror right now, right? Are you looking at a reflection?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
So if you're going to be late, and I have been in this situation many times, let the person know the second you know you're going to be late.
Would you say let the husband know who's waiting downstairs when you say get the kid's shoes on?
This is such baloney. Do you know that sometimes there has been like egregious, the family's been waiting for me. But more often than not, I'm sitting in the car waiting for Shane to come out of the house.
Would you say it's a more often theater of the mind trick?
I'm going to start taking, I'm honest to goodness, going to start marking things down when I'm waiting in the car with the kids and you're the one last one out of the house. Just to prove a point on the podcast.
Okay. Have you ever, so there's a book called Theater of the Mind written by Jay Ingram.
It's another self-help book
that really... was enlightening for me. So if you ever pay attention to a phone ringing and you just notice the interval between the first ring and the second ring or the third ring and the fourth ring, whatever, it will seem like a lifetime between those rings if you actually pay attention to it. And I think you'll never not notice this now. Yeah. If you're ever listening, you'll think, oh, I missed the last ring. It's not going to ring again because you're paying note of it. And then boom, it'll ring again. You'll be like, holy shit, that felt like an hour between... Right. Those two rings, meaning it feels like I am the one doing that to you because you can only pay attention to it when it's happening to you. When there's a flurry of activity upstairs, you got your hair in curlies and you're taking them out. You don't know that clock or that metaphorical ring has taken place when you've told me, Shane, get the kids' shoes on. Because for you, that means...
We're ready to go.
I have all the time in the world. That's just a precautionary thing. To me, I'm at the door unlocking it, ready to leave. You think Shane get the shoes on means let's leave in 2.5 hours.
Okay, hold on. Yes, I get the point. But how do you know that you're not the theater of the mind person and that like you're not noticing it just when I'm the one that's
because I know what you're talking about. And those things are literal rings in between because you're talking about me getting in the car, realizing I've forgotten my keys, going back in, taking a pee, coming back out. That pee is a minute. But it feels like an hour when you're in the car with two kids going, mommy, why are we leaving? I want muffins. And they're crying. True. But I'm talking about literal 2 hours.
Literal 2 hours. That's not true. That's Alex, probably it's happened very twice. True.
Shane. I promise you, there's this technique of me getting the kids' coats on and the shoes on. I've quickly realized that it only takes about 2 minutes to do both of those things, even if the kids are being very bratty about it. So I just go, oh, okay. And then I don't do anything. Mm-hmm. And then you'll come down and you'll be like, their shoes aren't on. I'm like, yes, because we don't want them running through the house with their shoes on constantly because they're not going to wait down here constantly. And they're going to overheat if their coats get on at that time.
I'm going to start taking note. I'm going to try to get out of the theater of my mind and start paying more attention. Let's both leave the theater.
Okay.
Because I still think I'm right a little bit. I think you're right sometimes.
I'm not saying you're not right. A little bit. A little bit is the operative phrase there. You're right a little bit. You're wrong a lot, though, in this case.
Okay, fine. I'll take it. I'll take it. Mm-hmm. I'll take that, and I'm going to pay more attention to it. Because I also don't want to be saying that and not realizing what I'm doing. You know what I mean?
And who's more likely to be late for an appointment or something?
Me.
Yes.
Me.
I'm way more likely to be 10 minutes early than I am 10 minutes
late. Here's the thing. So if I am running late, and if it's an appointment or something like that, I let them know ASAP. But I'm very infrequently late for appointments. But I will let them know ASAP. However, like we have been, you know, waiting for like a guest on the podcast before. And we've been waiting for 15 minutes without a word from them. And then we like close shop and we're like, okay, they're not showing up. We're getting ghosted because that's also happened.
Yeah.
And then they just pop on and don't say anything about it. And like, that's weird. I think that is ultimate rude, but I think it's less rude if you're running late because something happened and you let them know right away. Like if you let them know 15 minutes ahead of time, like, hey, this just happened. I'm going to be 10 minutes late. Can we start 10 minutes after?
Yeah.
Then you're asking permission. You're telling them with stacks of time. And it's like you're showing stacks. You're showing that you're being considerate. But if you just pop on 15 minutes late and you're like, all right, what's up? Like, let's go. That is very rude. And that happens way more than you think.
Yeah. But if you're running a podcast or an appointment place, especially dealing with people who have children, you got to send them, set the date.
Yeah.
That's reminder number one. Then a couple days before, that's reminder number two. And then an hour before, say, I'm so excited for an interview. See you in an hour. Mm-hmm. And you have to do that. And if you don't do those little reminders, I think the expectation is almost certain that the person's going to be late. And that's why I hate when I booked a doctor's appointment. It's like, in 2026, Betty has a hearing appointment. And then they don't send you a reminder.
It's crazy.
And then it's like, here's your $30 late fee for not showing up for Betty's precious hearing appointment. So I just got one of those in the mail. A $30 appointment along with your late payment. Speaking of late payments, Alice gets a ticket, lets it elapse, and lets it double.
Okay, it's not like it did something before doubling. It just went from the price to the doubling, and that was like the first thing. And then it triples, and then it quadruples. But I was serving pancakes at Lucy's school, and I didn't know I could be parked outside of the school for only an hour during the day, because in the evening, you can be parked out there for as long as you want.
So this just happened in the last 2 weeks. Yes. And about 2 weeks ago, I had a conversation with Alex, and I said, I don't know why this came into my mind. I go, Alex, if you ever get a parking infraction, here's how it started. I go, we're just driving and I'm just thinking random thoughts. I'm like, have you ever had a speeding ticket? Like, speeding ticket? No. Parking tickets? Yes. I go, oh, okay. I'm like, tell me if you get a parking ticket. There's a little bit of a pause. Like, I'm like, what? Yeah, I will. I will.
I was not even thinking of the one I got, Shane. It went away from my mind, which I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying I didn't even know about it. And that's why I didn't pay it on time, because I totally forgot I had one. So
no, if you did pay it. Because here's another thing I'm learning.
After the conversation, though.
So after that conversation.
Days after the conversation. I only paid it last week.
Days after the conversation of me saying, please make sure to tell me if you get a parking ticket.
Forgot about it.
Yeah. And then I said, just tell me, because I'll never be upset. I'll more be upset that you don't tell me. Mm-hmm. Then you paid it.
Yeah.
Then you still didn't tell me. Then I got a mail notification, because mail's always a bit behind, that says we owe the $60. Then I bring it up. It's like, oh, I forgot. Like,
I did.
You can't forget that much. And if you do, it's even worse, because then it shows, because That's the definition of inconsiderate, because inconsiderate is when you don't even consider it.
You know what? I paid in the middle of doing 5 things on a busy day. And then I was just like, ooh, I'm remembering right now. I got to get this done right now because I'm finally remembering. I do it. And then I had to do my next really busy thing. But you're not like,
Shane cares about this.
No, but I will remember next time. So I have a plan. Next time I get a parking ticket, because it will happen again at some point in my life, maybe not for the next 25 years, but it will happen. Just immediately, I'm going to send you a picture just so that we-
I'll pay it. I paid instantly.
That's the thing. So I'm going to be like, I'm going to just send it to you so that you can just take care of it for me so I don't forget to pay it.
Let's say you get in a mild fender bender.
Right.
Tell me.
Okay.
How many mild fender benders have you been in?
Oh, I got in one in my dad's car. I hit a-
When?
15 years ago,
I'm saying a recent one.
No.
You've had things happen because you've told me, oh, this happened a year ago.
Oh, didn't something scratch the...
Whatever it is. Yeah. Just tell me.
I forget things, Shane.
I know. So try not to forget them.
I'm going to try not to forget. I'm gonna text you photos and video footage immediately.
Okay.
Okay. Next, I like how is it rude to be late turned into that.
Well, because it's about lateness. You were late paying a bill.
It's true.
And that's rude.
All right. Alex roast. I'm just a turkey.
It's not a roast. It's pertinent to the question being asked.
All right. Should people be allowed to stand in seating areas around concerts? What's the etiquette? You're at a concert. I say yes. Stand if you want to. Dance if you want to. Maybe you can't afford floor seats. Or maybe you want to dance, but your back hurts too much for floor seats. Or something stops you from being able to stand the whole time and you want to have the option to sit. But I think at a concert, if you're in a seating area, you have the option to stand or sit.
Well, what if there's someone in a wheelchair behind you?
There's usually wheelchair areas where they're unobstructed.
What if there are people in their 80s behind you?
Well, then it sucks to be in your 80s at a concert, ma'am.
This was a man, actually.
Man.
But I think just knowing your surroundings.
Yeah. Being considerate.
Like, let's say you're on an airplane and there is a child or no one behind you. You can put your seat back.
Yes.
But if someone's like a big man or something, don't put your seat back, your chair back.
I generally won't put my seat back at all if it's an adult behind me.
Well, that's what I mean. There's exceptions. Like, maybe normally, it's like if Cher's like, all right, everybody, stand up and clap. That's my Cher. Do it. But if you just want to stand up and you look behind you and it's like, I'm 7 feet tall and there is this little woman behind me, I might ask or go into the aisle or something. Like, everything's situational.
Oh, there's 100%.
No end all. So typically I would say it's not rude because it's almost the expectation. But in some cases, I would say it is rude.
And look, on airplanes, I firmly believe that if you're like in business class, put your seat back. You guys got more room. If you're in economy, everybody is kind of struggling. Don't put your seat back. It just makes, and then you start. Because then if you put your seat back, the person behind you is going. And then it starts a chain reaction of just people being pissed off at each other. And it's like, you don't need to put it back. Like, just get yourself a little neck pillow and go to sleep that way.
Yeah.
Like, putting your seat back is so annoying because then it involves like if they have their tray down for drinks or something like that, that's getting pushed. It's all so annoying. I hate when people put their seats back on in economy only.
Yeah, they got to figure a better system for those seats.
Oh my God, yeah. And they just keep making them smaller. They keep shrinking them. It's unfair to the people.
Yeah.
We need a revolt. All right, Shane boy, last question. Bradley Cooper talks about being naked around his 6-year-old daughter. Not in a creepy way, but it did get me thinking, is there a cutoff age when kids shouldn't see their parents naked? And is it different for moms versus dads? I think it has to do, again, situational, whatever. Like, is it being seen in an appropriate way? Like, you're taking a pee, you're getting changed, you're getting out of the shower, whatever. Some families go to nude beaches as a family. And I think that you need to take cues. What?
I just never met a family that does that.
There's nude beaches. There's family nude beaches. Ponderosa, I think, it's outside of Hamilton. And I think that's a family nude beach.
I'm sure there's families who eat other families. But I've just never, I've just never heard of it.
Yeah, well, it's a thing.
You know someone who's done that?
I don't know somebody that's done that, but I've read about
I've read a lot of things. I'm just saying, That's interesting.
Well, listen, I'm just going to say, take cues from your kids. If your kids are like,
get naked, like, daddy, then, well, like, what's a cue?
Like, ew, shut the door, or give me privacy, or if they just run away, then it's like, okay.
No, give me a hug. Give me a hug.
No, you know what I mean?
No, I don't. I don't know how to take a nude cue from your kid.
I think that kids are pretty good at showing their discomfort or comfort upon running into a naked parent. Pretty, like, they show it either with their reaction or their body language or what they
so
say.
So what, if the kid's perfectly comfortable, it's like, I'm always naked now. They're no. comfortable, no! I'm comfortable.
No, but I just mean when they're young.
Feet kicked up, eating a sandwich. I don't know. I say keep the nakedness to a minimum. That's my general thought.
Well, look, they see my...
Unless we're hitting the beach, in which case,
They see my boobs every day. Like, I sleep without a shirt on.
Well, let's define nude then. Like, I consider nude genitals.
Yes, I consider it pants. Like, what's... Because I'm also an advocate for female toplessness, you know, in public and beaches and whatever.
Sure, so all things being equal, men can be topless. I'm even very topless... a little bit, like, I mean, when I'm working out in the mirror, my shirt's off, I'm recording videos, but
Liz, okay, when it comes, I mean, there's still, I can't go to the bathroom without the kids running in there and trying to talk to me while I'm wiping my butt or something, you know what I mean? So it's like, they, like, Lucy,
but it's not like, get under the bowl, like, they're not getting such a good look.
No, get under the bowl.
Are you comfortable with this?
I think try to avoid it, but if they run in, don't act like, my privates.
Yeah, of course. Yes, of course.
And then if you open the door on your kid and they're like, my privates, then there's a good cue to be like, okay, make sure that they always have privacy when they're doing these things, so they're not comfortable with nudity. So that's what I mean by cues, you ding dong.
Ding dong.
Bulges on the brain.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so follow your kids' cues if you're wondering if you're naked too much.
All right, folks, but that is all we got for today. Watch the show. You know what? This week, don't even give us a rating. I mean, do if you want.
They're not going to anyway.
No, so. But listen, don't even worry about giving us a rating or making us feel good with a nice comment, because you know we'd love it. All we're asking you to do is, if you're from Canada, you got access to Crave, watch Bulges, St. Bulges Day on March 17th on St. Patty's Day. Snuggle in with a cozy green beer.
And it's not a gross show. I just want to let that be known.
It's cute.
It's a heartwarming kind of workplace comedy, romantic type of thing. The dessert show, I get why you were repulsed by it. I get it. This is something different.
It is, and it's awesome, and we are really excited for y'all to see it.
Yo.
So we hope that you guys have a great St. Patrick's Day. Watch Bulges, and thank you so much for listening to this Family Tree podcast, episode 199.
Top of the morning to me.